You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I've gotten a few questions, a few people have asked me what I think Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein were up to. And I realize Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein are several dozen douchey, awful, harassy, shitty, rapey guys ago, that we've had a lot more come tumbling out of the shitty, douchey, harassy, rapey guy closet in the last couple of weeks. And Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein feel like they happened 10 years ago, but people have asked me, like, what was up with them? What did I think was up with them? What was their kink? What was their fetish besides or in addition to harassing women, besides and in addition to getting off on the power? Like, what was up with that? Harvey Weinstein whipping it out or letting his robe fall open or just suddenly masturbating in front of women or turning and masturbating in front of houseplants and horrifying women and behaving in ways that repulsed women. And same thing with Louis C.K., engaged in some very similar behaviors. Louis C.K. didn't rape anyone, as Harvey Weinstein has been accused of doing, but he put women in terribly uncomfortable positions where they felt vulnerable and violated, where their careers were derailed, where they withdrew from comedy, did real damage, but didn't apparently rape anyone, as Weinstein is alleged to have done. But what was up? What was up with the whipping out of the dicks? What was up with not just the abuse of power, but what's the kink there? What were they getting off on? How could someone get hard in a circumstance like that? Whipping your dick out and showing it to someone and masturbating in front of someone who does not want to see your dick. And people would ask me what I think, what I thought was going on with them from a kink perspective, from a digging into their erotic imagination, from an unpacking their erotic script place. What do I think was fucking going on? There is, of course, the abuse of power and sexual violence and all of that. And for some men, that's enough. But there seems to be something else at work, particularly in the case of Louis C.K., than just dominance and violence and violation. And here's the thing. Here's what I think is going on for some of these guys, for guys who engage in this kind of behavior. And I hate to say this because I don't want to get into who's hot, who's not, who's conventionally attractive, who's unconventionally attractive, but take a look at Harvey Weinstein. Take a look at Louis C.K. Men who aren't particularly conventionally attractive, men who, absent power and privilege and money and success and fame, probably not pulling in a lot, probably not on anybody's radar, not a lot of people's types, men who may be very self-conscious about feeling homely or repulsive and not being able to attract women. And here's the thing about erotic imaginations. They often seize on our biggest fears and they turn them into kinks. Often, not always. We talk about this a lot on the show. We talk about the gay guys out there who've eroticized the homophobic archetypes. Look at gay male erotic archetypes, and you see a lot of Marines, you see a lot of truck drivers, you see a lot of cops, you see a lot of firemen, you see a lot of sailors, you see a lot of different types of guys who aren't particularly gay positive. You see guys from walks of life that aren't noted for rainbow flag waving behaviors. You see guys from walks of life who are noted for anti-gay violence, and yet they become erotic archetypes for gay men because many of us, not all of us, will eroticize our fears. The other example I frequently use is right on woke ass feminist women who will not take orders from men and should not take orders from men and voted for Hillary. And in the bedroom, women often, not all of them, but enough of them, many of them, for it to be kind of a cliche and a trope, want to be called names, have their hair pulled, be thrown around, have their asses slapped, want to be called a slut, want to be called these things by someone that they choose to call them in a context where they're in control of when and for how long this goes on. But they have eroticized this fear, ravishment, rape, rape fantasies, very common among women. Fear of rape, 100% of women fear rape. Not all women have rape fantasies, but rape fantasies or ravishment fantasies, as some people prefer to call them, because in a rape fantasy, you're being taken by force by someone you wish to be taken by, which is not necessarily going to be experienced as rape. So perhaps that's ravishment. That is really common. So you look at Louis C.K., you look at Harvey Weinstein, you look at these guys who are, by an objective standard, not conventionally attractive, or you could say, some might say, subjectively homely or repulsive. Now, not all guys who are unconventionally attractive or subjectively repulsive are going to eroticize that. Some are, though, just like some gay men will eroticize these sort of violent homophobic types and archetypes, and some women will eroticize their erotic imagination, will seize on the fear and turn it into the kink. It's a way of controlling it, compartmentalizing it, and seizing it, and minimizing it. And so you've got some guys out there who are turned on. That's how they could get that hard on in that moment, where most of us wouldn't be able to get hard on. Someone's recoiling from you in horror. When you pull your dick out, your dick can get hard in a circumstance like that? Perhaps. Perhaps it could, yes, if your erotic imagination had seized on that fear of being laughed at, that fear of being repulsive, and transubstantiated that fear into your kink. That's how someone like Harvey Weinstein perhaps could do that sort of thing. Not just the exercise of power, also an element of it, and the violence, also an element of it, but the repulsiveness of it was part of the turn on, part of the kink. And I think that was definitely the case with Louis C.K., that part of his kink, part of his turn on, part of his erotic script was running toward that thing that he feared or initially feared and eroticized, was being repulsive, was women recoiling from him. So many of our kinks are fears that arouse us, to make our dicks hard, that make our pussies wet. Cuckolding, another example of a fear turned into a kink. So what do you do? What do you do with these guys? Well, as with any other kink, there is a way to indulge and explore. There is a way to access that consensually. Gay guys don't go out and intentionally get beat up by homophobic Marines. Gay guys maybe dress up as Marines. Gay Marines maybe will play that homophobic archetype in a consensual situation with a consenting adult partner where it's negotiated. There's a beginning and an end. It's contained and controlled. Same thing with women who have ravishment fantasies. That is something that you explore with a consenting partner and you discuss what's going to happen so that it happens in a way that everybody leaves the room feeling good and positive about it. If you have a kink where you want to whip it out, stroke yourself while someone recoils from you, that should be something like cuckolding or anything else, any other fear transformed into a kink, that you should find a way to indulge, to have that in your life that's consensual. Find a way to do that with someone who would like to do that with you or do that for you. Sometimes we are indulged by someone in our kink, someone who isn't into our kink necessarily, but will go there with us for us. But that is in the context, always in the context of some sort of relationship, not just met you, invited you up to my hotel room to talk about comedy. That's not a relationship that can happen suddenly in. Kinks don't happen suddenly. They have to be negotiated. And I'm sure there are other guys out there who have the same basic fundamental kink that CK seems to have and Weinstein seemed to have and aren't in trouble and aren't in the media and aren't losing their jobs and aren't being dragged on Twitter because they do it with consenting partners or they do it in contexts where it is permissible to whip your dick out and begin to jerk off, like at a sex club, like at certain kinds of sex or swingers parties. There is a way to have the shit that you need to make your dick hard without blowing up your fucking life and without traumatizing and harming others, more importantly. Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein weren't doing it the right way. And we should be cognizant of that. It should be a part of our sex education. Human sexuality is complicated, just like human society and culture and language and dinner and everything else is. And a sex education, a comprehensive sex education that was queer positive, that also talked about gender and talked about consent, also needs to talk about kink. Also needs to talk about variance. Also needs to talk about transgression. So that people who have these kinks can regard them not as problems and can experience them and their partners can experience them not as problems or traumas, but as gifts. As things that are a part of their sex life that make it varied and interesting and arousing and complex and textured, as opposed to the self-destruct button that guys, too many people, slam their dicks down on till they've blown up their lives and left a trail of victims in their wake. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, And on the Magnum subscription-only edition of the Savage Lovecast, Blaise Aguera Iarcas is here to talk about facial recognition software, and he's here to debunk claims that there is facial recognition software out there that can identify your sexual orientation. That's on the Magnum, and you can subscribe to the Magnum at savagelovecast.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. And right now you can enjoy the stamp service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code, SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic, enter SAVAGE. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/SAVAGE. The Savage Lovecast is sponsored by the Netflix original series Easy. Like many of our callers and listeners, Easy's characters face complicated relationships and face the obstacles of modern love. Each episode is standalone and different, so there's a story in Easy for you. It's got a great cast: Dave Franco, Mark Maron, Aubrey Plaza, and Kiersey Clemons. Season 2 of Easy will be available on Netflix starting December 1st.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling with a question about how to deal with having to see an abusive ex. So I dated this guy over a year ago. I guess we broke up a little bit over a year ago, and I dated him for a little bit under a year and broke up with him because he was emotionally abusive. He was very manipulative and gaslighted me and basically told me that everything that I thought and said was a result of anxiety and my crazy, way too big emotions. So basically just a fucking terrible experience. I came out of it on the other side and I'm fine and don't really ever have to see him because we live in different cities. But the issue is that we work in the same industry and there's a huge conference every year, and it's actually next week. So I probably should have called you sooner, but basically I know he's going to be there for a fact. And the thought of not just seeing him, but like having him be in the same building and room as me is just like brings on this huge anxiety and dread, and I just don't know what to do about it. It feels so bad, and it feels really familiar to the same anxiety and dread that I had when I was in this emotionally abusive relationship. And so I'd like to be able to just like go to this conference and like network and have fun and get to know people, but I know, I mean, I don't mean to be defeatist about it, but like just the thought of him even being in the same building as me kills me. And like, I just don't know what to do. So if you have any advice for like how to just like boost my confidence and be okay, like being in the same space as this person who was emotionally abusive, I would really appreciate it.
Far be it for me to tell someone who's the victim of an emotionally abusive partner how to feel about having to share a building at a giant conference with that former emotionally abusive partner. Not that they're not still emotionally abusive, perhaps with their other partners, but they're no longer emotionally abusing you. And you say that just the thought of being in a giant building with many, many, many other people fills you with the same dread that the thought of being in the relationship again might fill you with. And that, if I may say, is not entirely rational. So let's unpack that a little bit. What you may fear by being in the same building is that he will have an opportunity, that it opens you up again to abuse. Of course, there's the anxiety of seeing this person again. I have exes in the world myself. I'm great terms with most of them, not so great with one or two. And it would fill me with a little bit of anxiety if I was going to be in a place where I knew that they were going to be, because what happens if I run into them? And I think if you're the victim of abuse, that what happens if you run into them, that you need to think about that, because I think that's the source of the anxiety for someone who's been abused, is it's an opportunity for this person to resume abusing me. It's an opportunity for this person to, even if it's just dirty fucking looks, it's an opportunity for this person to get in my head and under my skin again. I'm making myself available to this person in a way that I'm not available to them anymore through other platforms, because I blocked them on social media, because they don't have my new phone number, because they don't know where I live now. And so I think what you need to lessen your anxiety going into this conference is a game plan and some allies who can run interference for you. Round up colleagues that you have who are also going to the same conference and just say to them, I was in an abusive relationship with X, with this person, and they're going to be there and I'm going to be there. And I just need some people that I can call on to be at my elbow if we're in the same room, just so there's someone I can turn to and talk to, so I can not have my focus be drawn to or drawn by this person. And if this person should approach me, can literally run interference for me and help extricate me from that situation. And then if you're going in knowing that you have a plan, knowing that if this person is there and they attempt to approach you or get in your head, or they're just in the room and you don't want your focus to be drawn by them, that you have people who are there who have said, yeah, rely on me, I'm happy to do that for you, I think you'll feel a lot less anxious. Because really, what's the anxiety about? The anxiety is about opportunity. The opportunity for this person to abuse you again and some more. And you can greatly decrease the chance of that person seizing that opportunity by having friends there at your side running interference for you.
Hey, Dan, I'm an early 30s dude. I've been seeing a girl for a number of months and she's great, waka, 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 but she has not gone down on me once. I go down on her regularly, love it, daydream about it, want her junk in my face all the time. And I would like to date someone who feels the same way about me and my junk. Really early on, as we were getting to know each other, I asked her how she feels about giving oral sex. And she said she likes doing it when her partner is into it. But if she liked doing it, why has she never mentioned it since or gone for it? And isn't it a fair assumption that I most likely would be into it? So my question to you, sir, is, do I say something or not? On the one hand, part of me feels like if I have to say anything, then we're obviously mismatched with respect to this particular thing. No woman has ever had to ask me to go down on her. That comes standard, and I love doing it, for me. So if this were something she actually enjoyed, then why would I ever have to solicit this from her? I have to imagine that because she's never initiated it or even tiptoed close to it, she's just not into it. But on the other hand, the good communicator in me wants to use my words and say, hey, is this something you're into? Not into? It's something I'm into. But I'm concerned that simply by asking the question, I may pressure her into doing something she's not super fond of. Obviously, if she hated giving blowjobs, then she wouldn't do it no matter what I ask her, say, and she shouldn't. But on the margin, if she's just lukewarm about giving oral, then I'm afraid if I bring this up to her, Dan, I may end up with a pity BJ, which is super not sexy. It's not sexy to be made to feel like someone's humoring you or making an accommodation for you or just acquiescing in bed, right? I want my partner to want my junk in her face just as much as I want hers in mine. I do not want pity BJs. So do I say something, Dan? And if so, what do I say? Or do I take these months of no oral sex as clear indication that oral does not come standard on this model, and that I should either return this model to the lot or accept that this is the price of admission I must pay to be with her?
Seems to me that several months in and many incidents of you eating her pussy in, that it's time to have a conversation with her about what's up with oral. And just as you don't want to get a blowjob that isn't sexy for that person to perform, I assume you're a good and decent guy who doesn't want to get a blowjob from someone who's traumatized by giving blowjobs. You need to have a conversation with this woman that invites her to open up to you, not just about why aren't you blowing me, but about oral sex in general and sexual histories in general. It's possible that she had a really unpleasant experience with oral sex. That sometimes is at the bottom of someone's aversion to sucking a dick. If that's the case, in past relationships, she may have been giving blowjobs because they were expected of her, because she felt that was the only way to keep the guy. And it was, in a way, perhaps a very real way, re-traumatizing her each time. You may end up in a place that's not just a conversation about likes and dislikes, but a conversation about sexual histories and traumas in talking to her about this. That's my hunch here. 3 months in, 4 months in, however long you've been dating this person, I think it's time to have that conversation. Just like 3-4 months in is a good time to lay your kink cards on the table, it's also a good time to lay your history cards on the table, a good time to lay your insecurity cards on the table, maybe even if you really trust each other, a good time to lay your trauma cards on the table and have a big convo about how you fit together and how you work together and how you can make accommodations and allowances that create more comfort. Maybe that if she can open up to you about her aversion and you give her permission not to blow you and you enjoy eating her pussy for its own sake, not just because you expect a blowjob in reciprocation, that she may relax and come to trust you more than she's trusted other partners who she went down on and perhaps had an unpleasant experience with, or perhaps she was violated more brutally in other ways by men in her past. Time to have that convo. I can't tell you what that answer is. Only she knows what the answer is. But something is indeed up. Said she liked oral if the person that she's with is into it. That may have been a kick the can down the road little white lie that allowed her to avoid having too early in the relationship a conversation that was more emotionally fraught and carried more weight than the relationship at the beginning could sustain, could hold up under. Now, this far in, where hopefully you guys care about each other more, you're ready to have those convos. Go have that convo. You use so many Savage Love-isms in your call, and I really appreciate the attention to detail there. Now you need to rush in there and use your words. Easy returns for its second season this December on Netflix. Easy is a Netflix original series that follows the loosely connected lives of a diverse group of young adult Chicagoans as they work their way through the maze of complications that come packaged with modern love, sex, technology, and culture. I watched Easy season one. I devoured it, and I cannot wait to see what's in store for this season. It stars Dave Franco, Marc Maron, Aubrey Plaza, and Kiersey Clemons, to name just a few. Also, Savage Lovecast regular Kate Micucci of Garfunkel & Oates is in the cast. Episodes are standalone in only 30 minutes. It's a quick and enjoyable watch, and you can jump straight into any episode without confusion. Each episode is different and intriguing, covering topics such as a couple embarking on an open relationship to try to save their marriage, reconnecting with an ex to gain publicity, or side hustling with unconventional jobs like being a sex worker or an Uber driver in order to pursue your passions. Watch Easy Season 2 on Netflix starting December 1st.
Hi, Dan, 26-year-old female calling. I have a question about my ex-boyfriend. So he and I broke up about 2.5 months ago in extraordinary fashion. It was a very, very ugly breakup. Not that I wanted it to go that way, but, you know, shit happens. So ever since the breakup, including I just found out even still recently, he's been very openly lying to people about everything that happened. Whereas I, like a normal, sane person, have just been explaining to people, you know, things didn't work out. We went our own ways. It's best for both of us. He's going around telling people that I stole money from him, that I stole a computer and the dog that I bought, when in reality, he owed me several thousands of dollars in unpaid rent. I had paid for everything on that apartment. For our house, I gave him money for his student loans. I paid for the dog, which, by the way, is a very expensive dog because he has a ton of medical issues. The computer was mine the whole time. The car, which he also claimed I stole, was also mine. It's in my name. I pay the taxes, the insurance, and the gas on it. I've been pretty quiet about who I've told. I mean, I've told people who are closest to me, like my family and my closest friends, but apparently, he's just telling everyone. I've been finding from acquaintances of mine. They've assured me that he's not very credible because he just sounds like a crazy person. And even my sister was saying, like, look, you don't need to worry about it. People are going to figure it out because his lies are so outrageous that they hardly make any sense. Because if he had all this money that he claims that he has, how is he living with his parents right now? But I don't know. I guess I'm just wondering what I should do about it. I really think it's probably not the best idea to confront him because he is a psycho. He was pretty physically and emotionally abusive. I know I don't want to talk to him, but what do I do about it?
If you were out there telling credible lies, insidious lies, you might have to confront him or get out in front of those lies and proactively run around disabusing people of the bullshit that he was peddling. But he's telling incredible lies. He's not telling credible lies. He's telling lies that nobody puts any stock in. And he's outing himself as the crazy person in the relationship and making himself look ridiculous and kind of sending up a flare and letting everyone that he speaks to know that they should not think about dating him themselves because he's the kind of person who, when a relationship ends, runs around smearing and disparaging their ex, which is always a bad move. You know, there's sometimes for accountability when you have to go out there and tell the truth about your ex. If your ex was abusive, physically abusive, emotionally abusive, yeah, your friendship network kind of needs to know. Like if there was somebody on the edge of your friendship network or even a close friend who thought they might want to date this person or runs into this person a year or two later and thinks about dating this person, you would want your friend to know. And it would be a friendly thing to do to let people know that, yeah, they were really bad news in these specific ways. Not to blacken their name, but to protect your friends from ending up in a relationship with this person themselves later. But if a relationship ended because it needed to end, the person who runs around smearing the other person looks terrible and looks undateable, looks like a risk in dating, because most relationships do end. Every relationship you're ever going to be in is going to end until one doesn't. We're in a lot more relationships that end than relationships that go and go and go indefinitely. And how people behave themselves after a relationship is one of the ways that people let you know whether they're someone you want to be in a relationship with. And this guy's letting everyone know that no one in their right mind would want to be in a relationship with him. He's only, in this case, your ex is only damaging himself and his future prospects because the lies he's telling are transparent and not credible. And they're making him look terrible. So let him keep digging the hole that he's digging and you keep doing what you've been doing. Maintain a dignified silence in regards to your ex and your relationship, except with people who need to know, your support network, your friendship network, the people you need to rely on, the people that you share your life experiences with so that they can understand you and be there for you just as they share theirs with you so you can understand them and be there for them. Otherwise, keep doing what you're doing, which is nothing, quiet. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance between looking good and being comfy, that's hard to find. You don't have to sacrifice style or comfort, though. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world just right for you. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will own, made from sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Ultimate feel-good undies for you when you want to feel naked, not be naked. For the fellas, MeUndies diamond-seamed pouch cradles your jewels and gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight. And ladies love the soft, eco-friendly fabric, right, Nancy? Nancy is nodding her head enthusiastically. She got herself a monthly subscription. They send her new underpants every month, and she gives out a little girly squeal when they arrive. Or so I am told. Nancy and I don't actually live together, so I'm not there when her packages come. But they come. Right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. Get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You order a pair, and if you don't love your first pair, get a full refund. It's so worth a try. 20% off, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Get on it, people. And it helps us here at the Lovecast if you do. So to get your 20% off, free shipping, and their 100% satisfaction guarantee, and the best and softest underwear you will ever own, and support the Lovecast, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage. This is a limited time offer. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. Go to MeUndies.com/savage right now.
Hi, Dan. I have a kind of unique question. Unfortunately, my family and I, we just had our house broken into. And as upsetting it is, as it is with, you know, the violation of your space and all of that, in addition, they went through my bedside table. And I know that because they stole something out of my bedside table. So since then, because of just feeling generally unsafe in my space and feeling like they've touched some very intimate objects that, you know, based on your recommendations, I paid a lot of money for, so I don't want to throw them away. I don't know how to get over this total, for lack of a better term, kind of boner killer. I feel kind of distant from my wonderful partner, who is totally supportive and awesome. He's been great through this whole process. However, it would be nice to connect with him physically, and I can't kind of get there after someone has been in our space and especially invaded something so intimate. So if you have any suggestions, I would sure appreciate it.
Your house just got broken into. You are still reeling. I have friends whose house was robbed while they were home. upstairs in bed asleep, and the whole first floor was ransacked while everyone was asleep. And they were really traumatized by this, you know, there were people in their space and they felt sort of distanced and alienated in their own space. And it took some time living in their space for it to feel like it was a safe place again and their space again. So this just happened. It's going to take a little bit. If this just happened and the next morning you weren't up for your regular bout of morning sex, if you're one of those weirdo perverts who likes to have sex in the morning, I don't understand those people, but whatever. If the very next morning you weren't up for it, that's not a surprise. It's going to take a little time living and moving through your space for it to feel like your space again. That said, on some level, at some point, you got to fake it till you make it. You got to actively lean in, as Cheryl What's-Her-Face might say, and reclaim your space and reclaim your boner and reclaim your pussy and reclaim the sex toys they left behind. If they're the kind that can be run through a dishwasher, if it's that kind of high-end silicone or stainless steel sex toy collection that you've gotten together on my recommendation, run that shit through the dishwasher so that you have wiped away any of their whatever, fingerprints, wuju, whatever, scrubbed away, scrubbed off. If you have some cheaper sex toys that can't be effectively cleaned, maybe now's the time to get rid of those. Go out with your partner, buy a brand new putting it behind us sex toy that you can bring into your space that no one has touched, no one has fucked with, and use it. And maybe don't use it in your bedroom. Use it in some other room in the house. If there's a room in the house that they didn't take anything from or they didn't get into, go fuck there. And then gradually let the fuck spread through the rest of the house as you move out of that space and into other spaces. And take back your place. Take back your boner. Take back your pussy. Take back your sex toys. They took whatever it is that they took from you. They took your belongings and your possessions. They didn't take your inner life. They didn't take your erotics. They didn't take your fantasies and your imagination. They didn't take your partner. They didn't take your pussy. Don't let them take all of those things. Defy them. Defy the violation. Push back against it. Reclaim your space, but be compassionate and indulgent with yourself. This just happened. Take a couple of days. Take a week to grieve it, to mourn it, and then fake it till you make it. Lean in. Get on it. Do it. Go buy that new sex toy. Go run the rest through the dishwasher and start fucking taking your space and your boners back. The holidays are almost here and things are starting to get really hectic, but you can decompress your life by using Stamps.com to do all your holiday mailing. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and home printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. Stamps.com makes it easy. They'll send you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage, and Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail every time. Print postage any day, anytime, because Stamps.com is always open. Right now, you can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com, click the mic. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I have a question. I'm talking with my girlfriend, and this has come up before. I say, dude, when I'm talking to her, like particularly sometimes in intimate situations, I'll say man or dude, and it's just something that I mean as like an endearing term because I'm comfortable saying it. But she kind of gets angry at me sometimes, and I get it. We talked about it. I just want to know if there's a better word. I don't know if you can throw it out there online or ask the at-risk youth, particularly like, dude, what encapsulates that same thing when you're just talking and you're just, you know, yeah, dude, you know what I'm saying, blah, blah. I hear you, dude, you know, but it's intimate and you want to express that, but also appreciate the feminine and that they're a woman and be empowering. I looked online. I can't find anything. Also, same thing, but it's sort of a negative thing, but like the word pussy, like, oh, that guy's such a fucking pussy or she's such a pussy, you know, and it like has this connotation of being weak and subservient and just, you know, pathetic, whereas like pussy should be beautiful and appreciated and empowering, you know, and I wonder if there's another word. I guess, you know, we don't want a word to put people down, but if there's another word that is pussy but isn't, I liken it to like when I was a kid and people would say, oh, you're so gay, you're gay, and then it was like And they were like, oh, I don't mean homosexual. I mean, they're lame or weak. And it's like, no, don't use that word because it connotes the stuff and all that stuff. So don't use gay in that term. Don't use pussy in that way. And maybe don't use dude in that way. I don't know. If you could throw it out there and have a discussion about that, I'd be much obliged.
Dude.
So you don't mind when people call you dude?
I like it.
This is Nancy Hartunian, producer of the Savage Lovecast. Why do you like being called dude?
Because it's like I'm sort of being welcomed into that kind of like a little bit more masculine kind of macho-y culture.
Like one of the guys.
I'm one of the guys. And I like calling other women dude too. It's fun.
On Broad City, Abby and Alana call each other dude all the time.
Yeah, and it's totally charming.
It is really charming. But it bothers his girlfriend to be called dude.
Yeah, why?
I get why it would bother her, because it makes her one of the crowd. You don't call your romantic partner dude, do you?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah,
really?
Why not?
Dude?
Sure,
dude?
Yeah.
You would do that?
Yeah.
See, that would drive me crazy. Terry calls me babe every once in a while, and I object strenuously. Because it's the sort of thing you call, like, someone that you like, is part of your crowd, or, like, a stranger almost. Hey, babe, like, I'm not your fucking babe, I'm your goddamn husband. Like, have a pet name that's specific to me, and you can call me that. Call me honey, call me, and don't call me babe. And I sort of understand where his girlfriend is coming from. If he calls everybody dude, and calls her dude, too, it kind of knocks her off the, like, my one and only, my special person, my lover, my girlfriend, perch down to, like, one of the crowd, one of the boys.
But aren't there instances when a man and his girlfriend are in that kind of zone where, you know, you're both dudes? Or if it's like in bed and it's like, you know, sexy times, I guess I could see where that wouldn't quite work.
It bothers her. How hard would it be for him to remember to use her name?
Right, okay.
Or a specific pet name?
Right. He can acquiesce to that for her because she's made it clear. But just, I thought we were going to discuss the theory of using dude.
Well, that there are some women in the world who don't mind being called dude and call other women dude because you want to be one of the guys?
Yeah,
because you're
fun.
A misogynist on some level and you'd rather be a man?
God, I hate women. Just kidding.
That is the impression I get week after week after week sitting across the table from you. No, it is not. That is not the impression at all. Nancy is always sticking up for the broads.
Yeah, no, I want to take it. You know, we get to be in charge of the language, right? We just take it and make it our own. And that whole, like, you know, hanging out and being tough and talking about each other and using dude, it's just fun. It's like not like so delicate. It's not so precious.
Maybe dude means men and men only in the same way that doctor used to mean men and men only, because women weren't doctors. Because they weren't allowed to be doctors. Maybe women aren't thought of when you use dude because women weren't allowed to be that kind of rough and tumble dude. And in our culture now, women can be dudes too. So maybe dude isn't gendered. Just like doctor was gendered because of discrimination, isn't gendered anymore. Maybe we can degender dude.
Nice. A nice metaphor there.
Thank you. Nice pivot. Now, problematically shifting to pussy.
Oh, geez.
All this time, Nancy has been dutifully recording me and editing me and pushing out podcasts where I importune people not to use pussy to mean weak, because pussies are powerful. They chew up cum and they spit out humans and they take a pounding. Pussies are strong. Pussies, like, spit human beings into the world. Like, there is no human being without pussy. And pussies, to make that human being, they got to get, like, pounded with dick, and pussies like being pounded with dick. Whereas balls, the slightest tap, like we say, oh, he's got balls. It's like, yeah, the slightest tap on someone's balls and he is on the ground. Balls are weak and exposed and vulnerable, and pussies are internal and strong and powerful. And yet, would you like to come out now as what I've just discovered you to be, a pussy thought criminal?
Listen, if you're in the car ahead of me, and you're like, it's a four-way stop sign, and it's your turn to go, and you don't go, I'm going to call you pussy. And I know that it's wrong, but it's just, it's like so emotional. It just works. It just feels right. And I'm really sorry. I'm apologizing to everybody. I know I shouldn't do it, and I'll never do it again. But it feels really good to call somebody a pussy sometimes.
Have you ever called another driver pussy while your daughters were in the backseat of your car?
No comment. Yes.
Wait till Jezebel gets a hold of this tape.
Wait till my husband hears this. I'm going to be in so much trouble.
All right. So I would say to the caller, please stop using pussy to mean weak, because I think it spills over into the idea that women are weak and that women are vulnerable, and that it just like classes, you know, it reduces women to the genitals and says women are weak, and that there's no power there. And it just like says to someone powerless or without power or less than or not as powerful as because labia, vulva, vagina. And it's like a faggot. I have a problem with that.
What if you're alone in your car, though?
Well, then it's fine. Just make sure your phone is off and Siri didn't like sneak into the backseat of the car with you. I mean, we can all say whatever we want to when we're alone in our cars.
Yeah.
So circling back to the caller, even though you like dude, even though you like to use pussy, he shouldn't call his girlfriend dude because she doesn't like it.
Right.
How hard is that to remember?
Yeah.
You remembered it long enough to get on the phone and call me and leave a message. You should be able to remember it in the moment and not call your girlfriend dude. Call her by her name. Call her honey. Call her sweetie. Don't call her babe because I hate that. I don't want anyone to use that. And instead of pussy, he wanted an alternate to pussy for a week. And I think scrote.
Yeah, scrote's great. If we just got to spread it far and wide until it really feels right.
Scrote. Don't scrote. Be such a scrote.
Oh, what a scrote.
Right. Because balls, unfortunately, mean strong. Like, got balls. It's going to take a long time to dismantle that idea that got balls, strong. So scrote. Because when people say balls, they think of like the balls. When you say scrote, it's that like weird, wrinkly bag of hairy flesh. That's a
thin. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And so scrote. I think scrote means weak and vulnerable. That weird rise and fallen bag of nuts on the outside of your body that anybody can reduce you to a quivering pile on the floor just by tapping. Don't be such a scrote.
I have a new Year's resolution.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 30-year-old bi woman with a really great bi husband. We've been together for 6 years and married for one, and we have a really great relationship. We trust each other completely, and we're very open with each other in life and sexually, and it's great. And one of the things we discovered about a year into our relationship is that we both share a kind of weird kink. I always fantasized about someone sort of like using me while I'm unconscious, while he's fantasized about doing that to someone. When he first told me about this, he was really reluctant and told me, you know, he'd never acted on this. And he, you know, reassured me that, you know, he didn't want to take advantage of anyone who couldn't consent. So he'd never done it. But, one of his exes would pretend for him and kind of help him meet that desire. I was into this too. So we did that for a while. And 4 years into our relationship, I approached him with the idea of me taking sleeping pills and him having sex with me while I was mostly unconscious. He knows all my boundaries and knows what I would and wouldn't be okay with, and it went really great. He even made a video, and we watched it later together. It was really hot. We don't do this often. We've done it like a handful of times in the last couple of years, and it's always been with my pre-drugged consent, and he's always stuck exactly to what we agreed on beforehand. So here's my question. I have told only one person about this kink, my best friend. She was horrified and basically called him a rapist and said she can't even be around him now and thinks I'm being abused. And I've denied this and explained to her that everything is fine and she's not hearing it. I wish I'd never admitted this to her, but now her reaction is making me wonder if there's something weird or unnatural about what we're doing. My husband and I both enjoy it, so shouldn't that make it fine? I wouldn't never do this with someone I didn't know well and trust for years, and I've never done this with anyone else before, and I fully consent to everything up until the point where I can't. So am I fucked up for allowing this? I would never suggest anyone has unfettered access to their spouse's unconscious body as a general rule, but if it's fully consensual beforehand, is that really that horrible? I don't know. I feel weirdly ashamed in a way I never have before now, and that really pisses me off. Is it a terrible idea to pre-consent to something? What do I do?
Is it a terrible idea to pre-consent to something? Well, let's set aside for a moment the old sleeping pills and unconsciousness aspect of the question and just talk about that. In an LTR, you've been with your husband for a very long time. I've been with my husband for a very long time. And in a sense, we exist, our relationship exists in a state of pre-consent. We have pre-consented to things that if we didn't know each other or didn't know each other well or were strangers to each other, we wouldn't be consenting to. For instance, Terry is in bed, ass up. I can climb on top of him and initiate sexual contact. And if he isn't into it at that moment, he's not feeling it. It's not the right time. He can tell me to stop. And of course I stop, but he's withdrawn his consent. Not I had to obtain it to initiate, but if I initiate it and he's not into it, he can withdraw it. And I totally respect that. But if I walked up to some stranger at the gym who was on a weight bench face down and did to him exactly what I did to Terry, didn't ask, climbed on top, initiated contact, it would be sexual assault. And I would hopefully get arrested, even though I did the exact same thing, but not in the context of a healthy, functional LTR. In my healthy, functional LTR, consent is a given, and then it can be withdrawn. And sounds like it's the same thing in your LTR, that you trust and love your husband and are familiar enough with your husband that you exist in a state of pre-consent to some things. What gets dicey about this and what freaked out your friend was you consenting to sexual activity when you're unconscious. And when you're unconscious, you aren't capable of doing what Terry might do if he's not feeling it in the moment when I climb on top of him, which is you're not capable of withdrawing your consent. But you trust your husband and you guys have had a conversation and a discussion before you are unconscious about the things that will happen while you are unconscious. And there's a video that you are able to watch later and you can, after the fact, which is itself a little dicey, determine that he only did the things that you two agreed to in advance. And yeah, that's a real gray area and that's going to be upsetting for some. But if it works for you, it is your business and no one else's. So you say you've only told one person about this. You obviously told the wrong person about this. So how do you handle this friend? Well, don't be a scrote. What you're doing is, by your own estimation, consensual and safe. And I think an objective person who's not a sex panic, kink phobic nut would look at what you're doing and say, well, this is a fantasy that under most circumstances couldn't be explored or realized, but you have found someone with whom you can safely realize and explore this in reality, not just through fantasy. And that's a beautiful thing. And you two are lucky, lucky to have found each other. And in past relationships, you two explored this. And in past relationships, you both explored this in an intensely responsible fashion. And then you lucked into a relationship where you can explore it in actuality, that you can realize the fantasy in all of its aspects because you found the right person. You found the one in a million or one in 10 million or one in 100 million person that you can actually do this thing that you fantasize about with and do it safely. So what you say to your friend is, fuck off. You don't understand. What we're doing is actually safe. It's actually consensual. And here are all the safeguards in place. Here's the videotape. And fuck off. And stop judging us for doing together that which we both enjoy and that brought us closer together and cements our bond and makes our sex life awesome every once in a while on the occasions that we do this. So stand up to your friend. Don't be a scrote. Don't be weak and vulnerable. Don't be shamed. Don't let her judgment burrow its way into your brain and spoil this thing that you and your husband do together and enjoy safely together.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the man in episode 578 with bipolar disorder who's trying to manage his drug and alcohol use. I'm bipolar myself, and the thing I didn't hear discussed that I was waiting for was whether the caller uses prescription medication to manage his symptoms. He referred in the call to his therapist, but not specifically to his psychiatrist. Given that he referred to AA meetings and relapse, it sounds like he could be self-medicating. Classically, for bipolar people, that's an upper, like cocaine or amphetamines, while you're depressed, and drinking alcohol when you're too manic. A prescription mood stabilizer is probably what he's actually looking for if that's the kind of thing that he's doing. He might benefit from asking his therapist for a recommendation to a psychiatrist who can help him manage prescription medication in addition to the talk therapy he's already getting with the counselor he presumably already trusts. If he does start prescription medication, though, it's really important that he stays sober while adjusting to the prescription. If he doesn't, it could confound his perception of whether the prescription drug is working and in the right dosage for him. It took me about a year and a half to find a dosage that works for me, and I think that's actually shorter than typical. If he wants to stay sober, though, being a psychiatrist about prescription medication might be the best thing he can do for himself.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling about the last episode about that 20-year-old that was smoking pot and it was laced. I definitely agree with what Dan said. You never know what the heck you're getting unless you are getting medical marijuana or you're going to a place that or a state that has it legal. I've had a couple times that I think that I've smoked something that was laced, and it's completely sucks. I don't know why people do that. But anyway, yeah, stick with Dan's advice. Make sure the pot is pot and it's not a freaking acid trip. And don't be smoking pot while you're living with your grandparents.
Hey, Dan, I'm just calling about the guy living with his grandparents in episode 578. You know, he said he's 20 years old, but you would never know it from listening to him. In the call, he mentioned that it's been 2 whole weeks since his weed relapse, so he should get his privileges back. And I think he sounded like a grounded 12-year-old. So I fully believe that he called you expecting you to give him a pass to do what he wants and smoke all the weed he wants and all that. So I just wanted to commend you for putting on your dad hat and telling him to shut up and understand that his parents and grandparents figured out a long time ago that he can't be trusted to make decisions. So good job. Keep it up. Love the show.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Christmas! Merry Christmas! We can say that. I say that all the time. And happy holidays. The holidays are coming. If you'd like to get a gift for the Trump hater on your list, go to www.itmfa.org and get an Impeach the Motherfucker Already hat, mug, t-shirt, button, lapel pin, itmfa.org. And if you like my political rants at the top of the show, you'll want to subscribe to Blabbermouth, the Stranger's weekly political podcast, where I talk about the news with Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Eli Sanders and snot-nosed millennial Rich Smith. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week with an installment of Savage Lovecast.